Hello and welcome back to the Ice World podcast. I'm Nadia Frontier. This episode is all about doctors deployed by the British Antarctic Survey to places from remote research stations to the sub-Antarctic islands or even to the research ships. Being so isolated on either a research station or a ship, you can't always guarantee that help from the outside world will be able to reach you quickly. So the role of the doctor is incredibly important in keeping everyone safe and healthy in extreme environments, and to have trained medical professionals on hand in case of any ailments or injuries. Later in the episode, I'll speak to Dr. Nisha Mistry from the British Antarctic Survey Medical Unit, or BASMU for short. Nisha is currently the doctor on board the polar ship, the RRS Sir David Attenborough, where she is responsible for the health of around 90 people, from crew to scientists and researchers. But first, an interview from 2022 with Becky Boys, the station doctor at Rotherhithe, when I was living and working there. Becky's love for nature was a big factor in her taking on the role at Rotherhithe, and you can really hear it when she speaks about living here. So, what inspired you to come down to Antarctica?
Oh, tough question. That's
a good starting one.
Just mostly the place, really. I think part of it was also the wildlife more than anything, actually, and the challenge of the job, probably the two things together. My parents are natural history illustrators, so they've always kind of brought us up with this love of nature and the world around us. And I don't think there's a better place you can experience that here in Antarctica. We're pretty much living in amongst it all.
How did your journey start?
I was meant to be just the doctor for here, but unfortunately we had one of our doctors had to pull out at the last minute. So rather than there being three of us deployed to the different stations in the ship, we suddenly found ourselves with two of us. So we had to kind of try and cover bases a bit differently than we normally would, which was great for me. It meant I could cover South Georgia for the summer there and then come and spend the year here. I'd so love to go back there. It's a pretty special place. It's a bit hard to describe. I think someone, the best description I heard was it's like someone's chopped the top of the Alps off and dumped those mountains in the sea and then just filled it with as much wildlife as possible. You're there amongst it all every day, and you'd get up, walk out the building, and there'd be some penguins walking up the street as you're going to work, which is a bit strange.
And the sounds at night, what were the sounds like? Because you're literally,
so noisy.
The buildings are amongst basically the beaches where the seals haul out and there are king penguins, right?
Yeah, that's right. So you have all the penguins at night, you have the seals in particular. A lot of the fur seals are really noisy. Quite a lot of the summer it's their breeding season, so they'll be calling to each other or the males will be fighting, and then eventually the pups happen and you have all the pups on the beaches and they'll be calling to the mums and the mums call to pups, and it can go on all night. There were definitely a couple of nights where there was a mum and her pup outside my window and they did not stop until the morning.
And what is it like being a doctor in such a remote station? How do you get all your supplies down there?
You have to have a lot of forward planning in order to see what you've got in your little pharmacy. We're surprisingly quite well stocked here, actually, which is really good. But I think it also adds a challenge to the role. You have to think outside the box a bit more and just be a bit more careful with what you're doing. But actually, especially at Rotherhithe, we're very well supplied. There's a lot that we can offer here. We can't do, obviously, everything.
At KEP, how many people did you have on station in the summer?
We had the BAS team itself was 8, but then we also have government officers and then employees of the South Georgia government. So they're there to help maintain the whaling station, to look after, there's a museum there and a shop for the tourists and a post office, because they get a lot of cruise ships coming in into the bay. And you get the tourists would normally stop by, and normally scientists would go on board for talks and things, and we'd get to interact with them. But unfortunately this year, because it was still the tail end of the COVID pandemic, that didn't quite happen as much. We could sort of see the tourists from afar.
So then how did you move from South Georgia in March?
Yeah, I left in March, and then I swapped over with the ship's doctor. So she became the doctor for South Georgia for winter, and I became the ship's doctor for about 4 or 5 weeks, I think it was, in the end.
That's the Sir David Attenborough.
Yeah, the Sir David Attenborough, which was really interesting to be on a brand new spanking ship. It was quite cool. Yeah. And then we sailed up to Bird Island which is another research station for British Antarctic Survey. We helped with their cargo relief, and that Bird Island is just incredible as well. It's still part of South Georgia, but as an island, it has even more wildlife on it. If you can cram more wildlife into a tiny rock in the middle of the sea, that is Bird Island.
Yeah, albatross everywhere.
Yeah, it's quite unique for the wandering albatross, which was amazing to see, to go up to that ridge and see these birds, which their wingspan can get up to 3 meters long, I think.
Yeah, it's got the biggest wingspan of any bird.
And you see pictures and you just can't comprehend how big they are until you actually get up and see them. And they are enormous.
Did you get to hold any of them? Were you there long enough to work a little bit with the ornithologists when you were on Bird Island at all?
A little bit. So, they do various different studies with the albatross there. And they also have like GPS tags on a lot of them. We had one when I was there that she noticed needed its GPS changed. So I got to hold it for her while she just changed the device. They also take little samples of the edge of the feathers just as part of their studies. They do a lot of different research on the albatross there.
So then you arrived to Rothera. So massive transition from a small station.
Wow. That was a little bit tricky to adjust.
Yeah, what was it like? What were your first impressions of Rothera?
Busy. There was a lot of big vehicles. I'd been warned that it's a bit like a quarry in summer, but when I got here, there'd been a lot of fresh snow just before I got here. So it did feel like Antarctica. But just seeing those icebergs, I was like, this is really amazing that I'm here.
But then very soon we were then into the winter, mm-hmm. after you arrived, and now we're down to a team of 23 people.
Yeah,
and you're the sole person responsible for us.
Yep.
And you're the only person in your profession here as well.
Yeah,
so how is that? How do you find that?
Definitely has its challenges and has its moments. I know, particularly when the ship was sailing away, it was quite a daunting thought to think that, because I'd only been here 2 weeks as well, hadn't really settled in with 2 weeks of people that I'd met briefly, and then the ship was sailing away and suddenly I was kind of going to be responsible for them. It's a little bit terrifying.
But you smashed it.
I'm very lucky in that we have really good backup back home with MASMU. So we have consultants there who are on call 24/7. So if there is a problem, we can call back home.
And you also get the chance to, in a medical sense, also engage with the diving team. So you get to do some chamber training as well. That's another aspect. And then you interact with the Dereford Hospital, also in Plymouth. So they're the diving specialists. So
yes.
So what's that like? Have you worked with divers before in a medical capacity?
No. So it's been really interesting to see that side of it and learn a lot more about dive medicine. We did a course before we came at the DDRC in Plymouth, the sort of dive centre, and that was really, really interesting to meet the dive doctors there and just have chats with them and also learn from their experiences. And it's great that we've got that back up here and we can provide that service to our divers here as well. And the chamber training is really interesting, and it's nice to add another different element to the job. As I said before, the job is so varied. There's so many different bits to it. It's quite good fun.
What's the greatest challenge, do you think, that you have encountered here?
Probably the fact that you're living with your patients. It adds a very interesting dynamic to the job. It's not something doctors are used to. At home, if you have a bad day in A&E, you can go home. You can sort of separate yourself from it. You can unwind. Here, if someone gets injured, you're seeing them every day. You're seeing how they're progressing. They want to know that they're getting better. And a lot of that just needs time. But you're seeing it 24/7 and being reminded of it 24/7 is a really weird one to deal with.
Always, always at work.
I'm quite lucky with the team here. They are quite mindful of it, and they try not to, and they try and separate it out so that work is kept to the surgery, and then I'm normal human Becky.
Because I suppose from our perspective, it's pretty unique to actually live with someone who's a doctor. So even if you've got a minor thing that normally you wouldn't see the doctor for, you just ask and be like, "Is this normal? Or like, should I be feeling this?" Or
and it's quite good you've got 24-hour access to a doctor. And it's easier to just come knock on my surgery door and just ask, which is nice. And I'm happy for people to do that. But it is just a bit
of a just different dynamic to what I'm used to back home.
So you're a doctor, obviously, yeah, first and foremost. But what other activities do you like to engage in?
I'm quite outdoorsy. And so trying to get out, trying to relearn how to ski. I've only skied like 2 weeks in my life before coming here. So that's been interesting to try and remember how to do it. So that's been good. And I think I really fell in love with wildlife photography at South Georgia. So that's been really good, just trying to do some of that here.
Yeah.
There's a lot less wildlife here and it's definitely harder to do because they're a bit further away.
And talking about outdoorsy, what did you do on your winter trip? So that's the week that you get with a field guide and you get the opportunity to go outside and experience Antarctica. What did you do?
I was so lucky with my trip because we had absolutely stunning weather. We had 3 really good adventure days, but I think the middle day was probably my favourite day of all because we went up a mountain called Biff, which has loads of these cool rime ice sculptures on the top. But what was also cool is that you skidoo the first half to this plateau and then you walk from there. But when we got there, it was almost like sunrise. And then it sort of, as the day went on and we went up to the top and then back down, it sort of went from sunrise and blended into sunset. So you constantly had those beautiful pinks and oranges in the sky. And the view was just amazing, looking out to sea, seeing the mountains of the actual Antarctic Peninsula across the other side, and then seeing the rest of the island was just phenomenal. And being the only 2 people there for quite a distance away. But all those colours made it so much better because everyone thinks that Antarctica is just blue and white of snow and ice, but all the beautiful colours of the sunset and sunrise catching on the mountains opposite, making them all pink, was really cool.
So what do you think you'll take away with you from here, being here, from a work perspective and also from a how would you like to adapt your life back home after living this experience here at Rothera?
I think it'll be a bit strange going back to the real world, especially going back to the NHS is going to be a little bit daunting, not going to lie.
Yes, but probably quieter because you were there during COVID.
Yeah, so like, I just started this job having just done, I did some time in A&E for the first part of the pandemic and then I moved across to intensive care. So I was in that for 9 months over COVID, which that coincided with that particularly bad peak after the first Christmas, which was horrendous. That's something I won't forget. So coming here has sort of been a recharge in some ways. It's had its other challenges and has been quite exhausting in other ways. Reassess what I want to do and where I go from here with my career. The whole experience is unique.
Yeah, everything about it is unique.
Yeah, it's a very niche job, I think. I've been exceptionally lucky to get it.
Thanks, Becky. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you.
That was Becky, who must be one of the few medical doctors in the world who can say they've handled an albatross alongside doing their day job. Although Becky did mention a whaling station on South Georgia, just to clarify, that is not an active whaling station. It's the relic of a whaling station that is used as a museum for tourists and station personnel. Gritviken Station is operated in the summer and it's a really interesting place and a brutal reminder of what it was like when whales were stripped and harvested from the ocean like they were in complete abundance. Becky's desire to travel continues and at the start of the year, she moved to Tasmania to continue practicing medicine. Next is a much more recent interview from February of this year where I spoke to Dr. Nisha Mistry on board the British Antarctic Survey research vessel, the Sir David Attenborough. She is still there now in the Southern Ocean and will be working as the ship's doctor until it returns to the UK in July. It's a really impressive length of time for a doctor, as we will hear in the interview.
Hi, Nadia. I'm on the ship at the moment, more commonly known as Bertie McBurtface to lots of the UK public. We are near South Georgia, so we're doing a science cruise, they call it at the moment. So we've got lots of scientists on board, and they're doing lots of sampling of seawater around different parts of South Georgia, but we're still in the sea at the moment, yeah.
So what's it like on board? How is it to be part of a science cruise? Have you done something like that before?
No, I've not done something like it before. It's really cool. I think initially I was wondering how I would find it because the first few months I've just found absolutely insane. I'm just having the best time. We've gone to like so many different bases and places And every day I think, wow, that's what a day. And normally it kind of requires like going on the land and helping with cargo, or just even being able to walk around lots of different bases. So I wasn't sure what I would feel like after 7 weeks being at sea. But it's been great so far. It's been 3 weeks, and it's going really well. The ship's full of scientists, so it's nice to see like all of the 14 labs are being used, and there's just so much going on. And you can go down to the labs at any time, and the scientists are so happy to teach you stuff. Like, you know, I've been going down in the evenings, like 10 o'clock at night, and you'd be surprised that they'll happily teach you about what they're doing for an hour or so. And then they've been collecting samples from like different depths of the seabed, so you can see all sorts of very peculiar looking creatures. So it's really fascinating. We saw some big crabs yesterday. Lots of the things just look like weird aliens, you know, like kind of like jelly-like centipede-y sort of things with big antenna and things that they're called sea angels is their common name. So they're a type of mollusk, but they just look so weird. It's awesome.
And they almost like fly through the water, so they live in the water column. Yeah. Pteropods.
Yeah, that's the name that they say.
What made you decide to want to do this crazy journey?
Even before I went into medicine, I've always wanted to. The reason I went into medicine was to work in remote places and basically just use my job to explore lots of interesting parts of the world that you might not be able to as a tourist. And so I've worked in like quite a few remote and tropical places before, and I was just working in South Africa on a game reserve before this job, and then I got back to the UK and I looked at a map and thought, where would I like to work next? And then I thought Antarctica, so I applied.
It's like quite a spontaneous application. I love that. It's not, because some people come on here and they say it's been on their radar since like 10 years or something, but
No, doing like expedition medicine, tropical medicine, that's always been what I've wanted to do. I just didn't know it would come out in this format. So yeah, I was sat in my GP surgery at lunchtime looking at a map, and then it just light bulb moment, I guess.
Love that. So when did you exactly join the ship?
On the 10th of October, 2024. Okay.
Wow. And you haven't actually come back to the UK at all since then. So you've had Christmas, you've had New Year. And when will you come back?
I will come back mid-July.
That's a huge stint. Is that not normally quite unusual?
7 months is the normal stint. But this year, there's an extended season because they're trying to finish off building work at Rothera. So we went into Rothera earlier than normal, and we will be leaving Rothera later than normal, like mid to end of June. So that's pretty close to midwinter, really. So that's quite exciting for the ship, or what I'm excited about being there so late. It's an extra long one. But
wow, Nisha, that's 9 months. That's almost a year. That's a long. I mean, mariners' contracts are 3 months and they get rotated out. So you're hardcore. I like that. You've done remote wilderness medical doctoring in other countries, and other continents. How does the Antarctic experience compare?
It's definitely my favourite job. How does it compare? Well, I think the biggest thing is it's just ridiculously well equipped on the ship. I mean, it's got to be, but you've got loads of medicines that are all in date, which, you know, is not normal for like lots of the places I've worked. You've got a really good amount of facilities as well. I think a bigger difference is normally I wouldn't be the sole medical person in a place, but I think like, you know, some places I've worked, I might have been the most senior person, so you're kind of used to working independently anyway. However, when on the ship, I actually do feel very supported because we've got the BASMU office, you know, like a phone call away. So if there's anything urgent or I need help straight away, I know I can count on them to respond straight away, day or night. So that's a nice feeling. I mean, it's weird being on call like 24/7 and, you know, you've got to keep your phone with you all the time. And sometimes people will call at 10 p.m. and you think, oh, something bad's happened. And they're just asking you if you want a hot chocolate. And you're like, okay.
That notion of being on call 24/7, you don't realise the toll it's taken and the responsibility. And then you come away from it and it's like, release. Or even I remember coming back to Punta Arenas and like not having a radio anymore, and it was I didn't have to tag out anywhere. I guess you're not really tagging out anywhere on the ship, but we have to tag every time we wanted to go to a different building, which you probably saw at the stations. But did you have to do any specialist training in addition to already your expertise as a medical doctor to be able to be a ship-based doctor?
We had 6 months of training before we got deployed. And I mean, they were an incredible 6 months. I was having so much fun before I even got deployed. It was insane. So we did loads of cool training, ship specific stuff, sea survival skills. That was awesome. I think one of my favorite ones that I did was a firefighting course. That was insane. I absolutely loved that. Like, I think that was a couple of days course. They teach you all about fire safety. And then you spend a couple of days, like, all kitted out with the breathing apparatus on. They put you into, like, shipping containers that they've simulated, like, a home environment in. And it's pitch black. It's smoky. You've got to find the casualties, get them out, put the fire out. I thought it would be, like, a tiny little fire. The room is ablaze. It was
really, and the hoses are heavy, aren't they? Like, there's so much water pressure coming through those tubes, and you almost get like a kind of backlash once you open.
I felt very lucky that I could experience those sorts of courses.
Did you have a bit of an idea of what it would be like to be a ship-based doctor? Did you talk to either Liam, your predecessor, or past doctors like Rachel Varnon?
Not before I applied. No. So when I applied for the job, on the application form, you can tick which bases you want, or if you want the ship. I just ticked everything. I was excited about all options. And then once I was in the interview process, they asked if I knew anyone who had done it before, and I hadn't. So then they put me in contact with some of the previous doctors, and they said it was like the best thing they've ever done, and it was just like incredible, and made me very, very excited.
What does your average day look like on the ship at the moment?
Get up around 7. We have breakfast. It's very nice right now because there's lots of fresh fruit because we've been to Chile a couple of weeks ago. So have a nice breakfast. Start at 8, and then I'll have like an open like walk-in clinic. So I normally see like 3 or 4 patients a day, and then do some hospital checks. So it's a hospital. It's a small hospital, but it still requires like, you know, checking all the equipment, checking the fridge temperatures, making sure the like defibrillators work, and so do some daily stock like equipment checks. And right now I am sitting in a drug cupboard for most of my day. This week I'm doing the stock take, so making sure we've got a good inventory of all the drugs we've got, all of their expiry dates, and then ordering stuff for the 2025-26 season.
Is the SDA surgery equipped in a similar way to surgeries that you've worked in back in the UK?
Well, yeah, if I compare it to a GP surgery, it's got a whole lot more stuff because it's trying to be a hybrid between being a GP surgery, emergency room, and a hospital ward. So it's got a lot of stuff, and it's really well equipped.
When did you go to medical school, and have you worked in the UK much as a practitioner? In addition to tropical medicine?
I've worked quite a lot in the UK. So I went to med school in 2011 to 2016. Then once you get your medical degree, you do 2 training years. Like, it's called foundation training, where they, to get your full registration. So you work around like various different specialties to give you a good experience of everything in the UK. I did that, and then normally that's when people specialise and decide what they want to become a consultant in. But I took a few years out of training, and I did a diploma in tropical medicine, which was awesome. It was very inspiring. I worked in Sierra Leone for a couple of months, did my specialty training in general practice, and then I went to South Africa for 6 months, and that was an awesome job. And then I've worked in India for some time, like helping to set up a hospital, and yeah, just done some projects like in other countries as well, but smaller stuff.
Wow. So how is it when you come back to the UK and resume your GP work? Does that feel like, I guess it's a lot less adventurous?
I really like my day job as well, but it's so strange adjusting to getting back sometimes. I think the bigger thing is when you're in the UK, because everything's so super specialised, you know, you don't see, if someone's got diabetes, you send them to the diabetic nurse. If someone's had a stroke, you send them to the stroke team. Whereas when you work in other countries, you're kind of the only doctor, so you just do it all yourself. So it's very strange being like, oh, okay, I've got to send you back in this pathway or this pathway, when you kind of just want to give it a go and do it all. But that's not how it works in the UK.
Interesting. I guess also having that experience like prepares you really well to then take on the responsibility of 90 people on a ship. So that's... it's impressive. What happens then if somebody becomes seriously ill at sea? How far from the land can the SDA get?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if someone gets seriously unwell, you spend a lot of time when you are seeing someone kind of practicing more conservatively than I would in the UK to start with, to kind of prevent anything getting so bad. So, you know, if someone has a minor symptom in the UK, you might say, give it a week, let's see what happens. You probably check on them more frequently here. You're just more aware of what could go wrong and making sure you've thought about those things and ruling out those certain conditions that could be fatal. And then if something does continue to go wrong, we'd get support from BASMU and BAS, and then they will help coordinate getting someone medically evacuated off the ship. But that could be days or it could be weeks, depending on where we are. It's something to think about for sure when you are managing someone.
And we also have to go through very rigorous medical checks before anyone really is sent down to stations or sent down to the ship. Well, what happens if you get ill? Who looks after you?
I really don't want to get unwell. I'm like doing everything. Like, I think even for me, I think if my worry is dental stuff, because I've got like a lot of fillings and I've got root canals, and I'm like, oh, I think if there's anything that will send me home, it's dental. So I'm flossing, I'm using interdental brushes, I'm just doing everything I can to stay healthy. We have a medical party, so we do training for lots of different areas of like emergency stuff. So, you know, we've got fire safety teams who are responsible for if there's a fire. We've got a medical party, which is made up of me and the catering team. And so once a week we have what's called doc school, where I teach them how to become a doctor. It's good fun. And we teach a lot of skills to do with like how to manage people in emergencies, how to assess patients, how to continue to monitor them. And I think it's good fun, but I think it's really good learning because it's a lot of the practical stuff that I would need help with. Or in a lot of the scenarios, it's, okay, I'm not here, what would you guys do in this scenario? Because it's every week, we can get some good momentum and get some good teaching going. So, it would be down to the party.
And do you ever get seasick?
No, I don't. That's been a pleasant surprise to learn. Before I came, lots of people asked how my sea legs were, and I really didn't know because I've not really been on a ship before. But it's all good. I think the thought of, if you're seasick, and then if I was to get seasick, obviously the reassuring thing is like, oh, I'll be on land in a couple of hours, it'll be okay. But if you get seasick, you'd be like, oh, I'm on this ship for 9 months. But it tends to settle for lots of people after a couple of days, and I've just been very lucky, I've not had it at all. I definitely thought that on the ship this long, or like I thought the highlight of being on the ship would be getting to all the bases, and the bases are awesome. But also just being on the ship is like insane in itself, and like all of the ice, and yeah, it's crazy.
How do you stay in touch with your family? Do you miss them whilst you're away for such a long period of time, and friends back home?
Yeah, I do miss them, and especially because, you know, you can't, they can't come or see you, or it does make it harder. But we've got insanely good internet, so it's really nice that you can video call people, and the quality of it's really good, so that massively helps.
And what's the food like on the SDA? People rave about how great it is. Are you in agreement?
Yeah, the food is great. Yeah, the food is amazing. You can't really believe how good quality food you're eating when you're in Antarctica, but it is really good. And it's so nice just having someone cook all your meals for you. I thought I would like really miss cooking, but it's just the novelty of having someone do all your meals for you is just still so nice. Especially when we get to port, we've got lots of fresh fruit on at the moment, so that is really nice. We don't really, like the other bases, they can go quite a long times without having fresh fruit and veg. I don't really feel like we have that struggle so much on the ship, so that's nice.
Can you remember what it was like when you first arrived to Antarctica in November? What was it like seeing the continent? Is it kind of how you imagined it to be?
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. It was genuinely mind-blowing. Like that month of being in Antarctica and going to like Bird Island, South Georgia, Sydney, Rothera, King George Island, it was really mind-blowing. Like there's just so much beautiful wildlife. Even being on the ship coming south, when you're seeing your first iceberg, like it's really incredible. And then the passage down to get from between like Falklands to Rothera, there's a narrow passage called the Lemaire Channel, which is absolutely like, it's just insane. Like it's so beautiful, it makes you feel like you want to cry. I can't describe how stunning it is. So like going through places like that, and then you're seeing the like sun was setting, you're seeing whales, you're seeing penguins swimming along. It really felt very magical that first time. I mean, it still does feel magical. And then you get to all the bases and they're just insane as well. Like when we went to Bird Island, I couldn't believe it. It's just like, it's so wild. There's just animals eating animals and just so much chaos. And yeah, I loved it.
And have you had to break through any ice during your journey? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, what's that like? Loud?
Yeah. I mean, again, that's been like my favourite bit, which, you know, when I was saying, you think you come here because you're going to go to the bases and that's the cool bit. But ice breaking is like the best thing ever. For me, it is. I think the bridge love it as well. But it's, you're just hearing all this like crunching and like roaring of the ice breaking underneath you. And then if you go like lower down in the ship, or you go right to the front of the ship, you can just see it like split in two and roar and crack and the ship move. And it's really mesmerizing. I can be outside for hours when we're doing that. It's yeah, there's no like noise like it.
Have you got any other favorite moments?
So many. One day was like the best day ever. I say every day was the best day ever when I think back to like going back to all those different bases. But there was one day when I went to Bird Island where the station leader said, "Nisha, can you do us a favor? Can you go up to Fairy Point? It's a few hours like walk away and check the medical kit in the hut that's up there, and you'll have to go past lots of breeding albatross and thousands of penguins." And I was like, absolutely, this sounds like the best day. So then me and another scientist and a couple of other people went up, and yeah, you just see just hundreds of like albatross chicks. There was 50,000 penguins that we saw like in a big amphitheater of like all the seals that you're going past on the way. Then we saw like a penguin colony with all their penguin chicks, like the Gentoo chicks, and checked the medical box, very taxing job of course, and then came back down, and then we saw a pod of orcas when I got back on the ship. That was a good day.
Just another day in the office, really. Well, I wish you the best. I'm speaking to you now in February and you've still got 5 months. 5-6 months on the ship. So I hope it continues to go as well and that you've got so many great experiences and magical encounters, and it'll be really cool seeing the changes into winter and losing daylight as well, because I imagine you've still got almost 24 hours of daylight at the moment.
Yeah, we're a bit north to be having 24 hours of daylight at the moment, but when we were further south on the English coast or at Rothera, yeah, we had that, and it was insane. I loved it.
Well, it's so lovely to speak to you, Nisha, and thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Nadia. It was really great speaking to you as well.
There are many roles available in the job section of the British Antarctic Survey website. You don't have to be a medical or scientific doctor to work at the bottom of the world or on ships. There are engineering, administrative, catering and other roles available too. So do take a look if you're thinking of a new challenge. And as ever, if you enjoyed the Ice World podcast, please tell people and think about writing a nice review. It really helps us spread the word. Tune in to our next and final episode of season 4 of the Ice World podcast, where we'll hear about a road trip around Antarctica. This might sound crazy, but it's a crucial method in which deep field operations can continue to run across the Antarctic summer whilst being simultaneously provided with fuel and equipment from what is locally known as the Traverse. But what is it really like to live on the Traverse, on board this moving train on skis for months on end? I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.